Welcome to the Weekly Leader Podcast, episode number 73. I'm Peter Mello from Sea Fever Consulting and the founder and editor of the Weekly Leader blog and podcast. And my usual podcasting partner is Pam Fox Rollin from IdeaShape, and she's off this week, so I've invited a special guest co-host, a leadership blogger that I'm very enjoy following, and his name is Tanvir Nasir. And welcome to Weekly Leader.
Thanks, Peter. It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Great to have you. And why don't you just really briefly tell people a little bit about who you are and what you do. We're going to get in a little bit more into it in a bit, but quick rundown.
Sure. I'm a business coach. I work mainly with small businesses and entrepreneurs. And I write a blog on leadership and workplace issues on my blog at tanvirnasir.com.
So each week we start out with a leadership in the news item, and you and I talked about a little earlier before we got on the podcast about the U.S. elections. Been pretty top of the news here in the U.S., and you're in Canada, so I was interested in your non-U.S. perspective on what transpired on Tuesday.
Sure. This is a good thing that I wanted to actually discuss as well, because of the fact that, you know what, I can't be quantified as being a Democrat or Republican, because I really do think there is a valuable lesson in leadership here to be learned, and that is, it's about, you know, being in control as a leader of the message you share with your employees, with your constituents, whatever, and making sure that the message is received and that you're responding to maybe the reactions it's getting accordingly. From my vantage point, I think that's part of the reaction that Americans have had to President Obama's policies, whatever, which one you want to refer to, that they don't like what he's been doing, even though possibly if we went back in time, the things that he's trying to do were the things that he was voted for, but maybe it's because of how he's communicating it and how he's not responding to their concerns that people aren't happy. They don't get what's going on. And interestingly enough, one thing I find that's really missing is, and it's interesting because I'm sure most people are going to be surprised, is a lack of empathy. I find personally in how Obama is connecting with his constituents now. You know, when he was running for president, one of the things that was really taking notice around the world was how very emotive he was, how very passionate he was about, you know, saying to the Americans, I understand, you know, things aren't going well. You're concerned, you're afraid and all that, and I get that. And I want to help change that. And I think that's what people gravitate towards. Here's somebody who's not just doing the politicking thing of just giving us, well, I'm going to cut taxes or I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. He was trying to relate to himself to what the average American was going through. But then when he took office, it looks like he got this assumption that to be a good leader, you have to be cool and collected, that exhibits confidence. And I think in actual fact, I think what it showed more, at least from my vantage point, was aloofness. He doesn't seem to come off as being necessarily someone who's recognizing the frustrations that we're hearing people have. He's just not, he's not responding to it. And, I think that's the important thing that, you know, leaders need to be focused on, if you have a message and you're communicating it, if you look at how the response you're getting, is it reflect the kind of response you wanted to get from your message? And if it doesn't, then what does that say about how you're communicating and what your vision is?
It's a real rich topic for discussion. We probably should actually make it a roundtable discussion for a Weekly Leader in the future, because there's so many elements to it. But so let's think about it a little bit. But we're often the worst judges of ourselves, and often we're not really great at receiving feedback, especially independent or indirect, I should say, feedback. And in this instance, I think in what you were just talking about is probably applies with respect to the voters and the president, although on Wednesday morning he certainly understood a little bit more about what the voters said to him. Well, what do you think? What do you think about that? That as leaders, sometimes when we get in a position, and I think higher up we get in an organization or in a system, the more distance we get from those that we're leading, the less responsive we may be to the feedback we're getting, the less we recognize it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely think that's what's at play here. I think in Obama's case, I do believe he thinks that he's trying to solve the problems that he was elected for and what people say are the things that are facing him. I think the problem is that when he hears people's fears, he takes it in, and I do think he's aware of it, but I think the problem is that he's not in return reflecting that back, that the message is being received. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration from this past week is coming from. It's not just that we don't like some of the initiatives you're doing. It's that we still have the fears, the concerns, the frustrations we had 2 years ago, and it's not, we don't feel like you're registering it. It's like it's not coming up on your radar. And, I mean, obviously I couldn't say if it is directly, but I think what he relates back, he's not relating it back to them, to the Americans, and as a consequence they feel like he's kind of ambivalent to it or oblivious to it. I think for me, especially with regards to this whole situation of the midterm election results, demonstrates the importance of having, you know, empathy and emotion in your communications as a leader. I've read a few things where people were making comparisons between candidate Obama and President Obama in terms of communication styles. And it's true. If you look at some of his speeches as a candidate, he was very passionate. He was very engaging. Whereas when he became president, it was more matter of fact, more scholarly. You know, it was like he went from being a poet to being a text writer. You know,
interesting. Yeah.
It's not the content, the ideas behind it, I wouldn't say have changed drastically, but it's his presentation. And I think when before, he was really trying to show the American public, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm showing you that I'm hearing because I'm relating it back to you. Whereas now, I think he was constantly just trying to give facts. Look, this is going to solve this problem. And people really could not engage with it because he wasn't connecting with them emotionally. So because of it, they couldn't connect to the solutions he was offering. And because of that, they couldn't really make a decision. Well, is this really the best decision for us? And as a consequence, it was hard for people to want to support it.
Sure. So another thing we talk about often on the podcast is that what you get, especially in politics, followers are often looking for scapegoats. We put people in very difficult positions, and it's not just politics, really. Change, and we've been in an era now for the last probably 5 years or so where we need to really engage in some significant change. Change is difficult, and it's easy to push the button to vote for somebody and then sit back and hope that they make that change happen, when in fact the only way the change really happens is when the people embrace it and actually become involved and make changes themselves. So how much do you think of this is that people kind of sitting back and expecting change to happen and watching it on TV rather than making it happen in their lives?
Obviously people have to be invested in something for the change to happen. But it's asking a lot for people to be invested in a change if they don't believe in it or if they don't understand it. And I think, again, here's where something where as soon as Obama came into office, he forgot what made him so effective in rallying his troops and rallying the public to vote for him. And that was that he didn't really engage the American public in a conversation about the challenge that they were facing, about the health care issues, about the economy, about all these measures to put funds into the economy to prevent the double dip in the economy. And because he didn't really engage them, it was hard for the Americans to have a sense of trust and a real keen understanding of the measures he wanted to implement. I mean, the day before all the elections, there were a lot of people who were listing a lot of the measures he put into place and were showing how, you know, now with the year difference, we can actually say, yes, his measures actually did stop the bloodletting. But see, that's not what the American American population responded to. And I think partly because they were not invested in those changes. Even though if we were to go back and take some of those out and we would see, oh, actually it would have deleterious effect if we hadn't done it. It doesn't change the fact that people weren't emotionally connected to it. There wasn't a sense of trust that was built between the ideas he was now pushing forward and what people were seeing. So that lack of engagement and that lack of real conversation about, okay, this is the challenges. This is what we're going to try to do. What do you think? And then, encouraging their participation, encouraging their feedback. And, you know, the concerns they have, showing, okay, you have this concern about this. Look, this is how it's going to solve that. That lack of conversation, I think, is what made change such a hard thing.
And then on Wednesday, he did, have his press conference, and he took responsibility for what took place on Tuesday. What do you think about that with respect to what a leader should do?
I think that was really good because I do recall him saying that he got the message that he needs to be responsible for setting the tone of the conversation. That, and I think this is, as soon as he said that, I'm like, yes, you got it. That the problem was is that he allowed too many of his opponents, too many of the people who were not people who didn't adopt or early adopters buy in people for the message. If we think about it in a company, right, if you want to implement a change, the key to really taking it by the bull by the horns is to find those early adopters and have them help you rally the rest of the troop. It's not so much to focus at the naysayers. And I think what Obama did was he forgot to focus on his early adopters, the people who were so engaged with him and saying, I need your help. Instead, he let the naysayers take control of the conversation. Mm. And as a consequence, I think the message got distorted, and his vision was not what people understood. They understood an interpretation of his vision. So I think he got the message. I think he understands that he now needs to be a little bit more in control of the tone. He needs to be more in charge. He needs to make sure that when people are saying stuff, he responds to it, incorporates it into his messages so people see that they're being heard.
Well, we appreciate your non-U.S. perspective. Most of our contributors here are from the United States, so it's interesting to hear your take on it, and I'm sure your media has a slightly different spin than our media on it, so I appreciate that.
What is your password? Your password has been accepted.
Plugged into a stream of real-time data. Cyborg soldier, a techno warrior. Computer, camera, optical display, all connected to the World Wide Web.
Crystal cybernetic technology, crystal cybernetic.
Pioneering the computerized lifestyle. The World Wide Web.
Hi, this is Wally Bach. I'm here to point you to this week's top leadership posts from the Independent Business Blogs. This week, four of my picks involved communication in the day-to-day work of being a boss. The first post was Learning to Ask for Help from Art Petty. If you're like me and came up at a time when the boss was supposed to know everything and not show any signs of weakness, then you know how hard asking for help can be. But even if you're starting out today, asking for help can be tough to do. That's why you should read this post. Ann Barrs writes about the immeasurable value of being needed. When people who work for you feel like they're needed, they're often willing to go the extra mile, and even further sometimes. When they do that, they deserve thanks at least. Scott Eblen notes that our workplace seems to be a lot less civil than it used to be. You don't hear thank you as much as you should. Scott tells you why saying thank you should be part of your everyday behavior, and he gives you some guidance on how to do it well. Another thing that should be part of your everyday work as a boss is coaching. Steve Russler shows the situation where you see a team member struggling with an issue. He suggests that rushing to the rescue might be a bad choice and offers you some alternatives. The last of this week's posts is a little different. Tanvir Nasir shares three steps to get your leadership groove on in a solid post where jazz is the core metaphor. This builds on a fine post by Gwen Tiotro and reminded me of Max Dupree's great book, Leadership Jazz. Every week I've got a challenge of the week to get you thinking. It seems to me like jazz and classical music get all the play when it comes to describing leadership. Well, what about rock music or folk music? What about slide whistle and kazoo bands? This week, use a form of music other than classical or jazz to come up with some lessons for doing a better job of leadership. That's it for this week. I do most of my blogging at 3-Star Leadership, where I try to help bosses at all levels do a better job and lead a better life. I also join others blogging about talent development at Results Versus Activities. And at Toolbox for HR, my blog is People and the Changing Workplace. You can find links for all of them on the Weekly Reader site. My latest book, Ruthless Focus, is out. You can buy it at Amazon or read about it on my blog. I'm also on Twitter. I'll see you there, and I'll see you here next week.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
I asked you to give us a website of the week, and we usually take a minute or two to give people an idea of a place that they can go to find information about leadership. So what do you got?
Well, actually, I was trying to find like a good website, but I found a study that I'd like to share because it's something I find that in leadership circles is an issue we tend to be seeing a lot of discussion about, and that's about managing the millennial generation.
Great.
There was a study done this week, or the study results were released this week in Canada, and it was looking at finding out what is it that the millennial generation, as they are starting to come in and be considered to be new employees in the workforce, what is it that they really are after? Because, you know, there is this notion out there, either that they're demanding, that they're self-entitled, self-absorbed, or that they're going to be these dramatic change makers. They're going to come in and basically change the world. This study basically asked them, what is their perception? What is it that they're after? And basically what they found was, for example, 82% of them said that they want to work in a workplace where there's a balance between independent work and working in a team. And interestingly enough, that 34% of them prefer a formal office structure with cubicles for entry-level employees rather than those open concept or, you know, it's one of those Google-type offices that we all assume is what they're all expecting to find. And 56% said that they believe business casual was proper office attire. So there's a lot of interesting things which show that they're not so dramatically different than any of the employees we've had in the past. But if we look at, again, some of the stuff that we've been talking about communication and describing what you want to accomplish, they said the study researchers found that these new workers, they want to understand the corporate culture. That matters to them. They don't want to just come in and fill a slot. They don't want to say, okay, I'm going to be your new junior accountant. They want to understand also, as your junior accountant, what's the corporate culture of your organization? What are the values? What is it that you want to accomplish? And they want to know how they're going to help contribute to that.
Great.
So I think those are some interesting findings, because like I said, it seems to be a very polarized topic where people seem to either look at them as being like, this is going to be a headache generation to have to manage.
Sure.
Or that people are basically abdicating any sense of control, saying, okay, well, they're going to come in, they're going to rework the whole infrastructure, the organizational structure and management practices and so forth. And I think this gives us a more balanced, really should be expecting from this generation.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. So let's talk a little bit about who you are and what you do and where you've been along your leadership journey. So where do we start here? What was your first earliest memorable experience about leadership in your life?
That's a good question. I would say it'd have to be one of my summer jobs, I think a lot of us ended up doing one of these jobs where you work at a summer camp and so forth. And I remember going into one, just wanting to just be one of the camp counselors and meeting with the organizers of this camp, and ended up getting bumped up to being one of the camp instructors, that they said, you know what, you really seem to have a lot of ideas. You have a lot of things that you want to do, things that you want to accomplish, things you want to encourage in the children. And we think it'd be better, rather than restricting you to just one group, we want you to do that with all the kids in our camp. And for me, that was probably one of the first times where I started understanding that leadership's not about being in control. It's really about how can we serve others? How can we help others become better? Because when I got this position and I was involved in all these, you know, high-level meetings, I was there with the president of the organization, and they were discussing their budgets, and I'm thinking, why am I here? Why am I involved in this? This is supposed to be a summer job. And then that's when I realized it's because, well, I was one of the people who was defining the values and the purpose of this organization. And that's why I was there. And the reason I was there was not because I wanted to be in charge of people. I wanted to tell people what to do. But it was because I was there saying how I have stuff that I want to impart to others. I want to help others accomplish something. I want to work together to create something. So that was probably one of the first times when I started thinking differently about what it means to be a leader, that it's not about, you know, having people report to you and just do your bidding, but it's help being in a position where you can do a lot of good in helping others.
So along your journey, any specific person that's really influenced the way that you you exercise leadership, your style?
I've had a few, I'd say. Like, I've had a few that I would refer to as being, like, bad examples who were, like, what not to do. But I've also had some really good ones. One who I really do consider as being one of my mentors in as I went through going through the workplace environment and working your way up and so forth. He also was one of my best friends, and unfortunately he passed away several years ago, but he was one of the administrators at the university where I did my master's degree, and he was in charge of this department, and one of the things I was always impressed by was that he would have, you know, the heads of departments coming into his office and talking about all sorts of stuff. But then at the same time, he would have these laboratory technicians who were also under his responsibility coming in, and they would be, you know, discussing, you know, personality issues, like someone in the lab was bugging him, or they would talk about some equipment failure and so forth. And he would just switch from dealing with such what we would often consider petty, insignificant issues compared to the fact that he'd have these heads from the university coming in and saying, we got such and such a person coming in, this foreign minister from this country is coming and visiting our facility and so forth. So in comparison, it looked trivial. But every single person that came into his office, because I used to hang out there. He'd let me hang out and, you know, just like whatever. And I only realized afterwards that he let me hang out there because that was his way of letting me see, get my hands wet and see how to lead others. Every single person who came into his office mattered to him. It didn't matter the title. Like, whatever issue they had, he treated it like the most important issue. He didn't say, oh, I just had this guy who was the big honcho at the university come in. I don't want to hear your petty issues. Every issue mattered to him. Every issue was important, and he made everyone feel like they were not only being heard, but that they were being appreciated for the challenges they had to deal with to get their part of the job done.
Great. Go ahead. Sorry.
For me, that was, you know, and the awesome thing was he never even pointed it out. He would never say to me, see, that's what you're supposed to do with people. He just did it, you know, and I know now if he were to hear me talking, he'd be smirking because I'm making such a big deal of it. But for him, it would be like, but that's what you're supposed to do, you know?
Last week, we had Scott Eblen, who's written a new book, the second edition of his book, The Next Level. And we had a great chat. And what came out in that chat, I thought, was the concept of vulnerability in leadership. Sometimes we end up in situations where we find ourselves like fish out of water. And any thoughts or any personal experiences yourself in that area?
Yeah, I enjoyed your interview with Scott there. And, you know, I think I particularly enjoyed his thing about how he was talking about confidence and self-confidence and, you know, managing that balance of being confident in your abilities, but not to the point where you're you know, thinking you can accomplish everything. And I've had that experience where you realize how you have to make that transition from being the person who's basically the go-to person. If there's a problem, I'll just fix it. And that you have to basically abdicate that sense of control to others and say, like, I'm leaving it up to you. I'm trusting you to be able to do this, and I'm going to help you accomplish it, and it's going to be your accomplishment. And I think that it touches a lot on what Scott was talking about, how some people tend to feel like in leadership circles when you get up there that you don't feel like you should be there because everyone's expecting you to have all the answers. But, you know, I don't know if a lot of us really expect our leaders to have all the answers, as it is that we expect them to help us solve the problems. If they had all the answers, then they wouldn't need us for our experience, our knowledge, our capabilities. So I think for a lot of leaders, I think the key is to understand that people want you to be there because you're the one who's capable of appreciating the bigger picture. They only can focus on that one part of the puzzle, that one puzzle piece, and that works for them, but they need you to be more overreaching. And when you're like that and you recognize that, it's not about me figuring out where all these puzzle pieces, how to fix them. It's my job is to make sure they all fit where they're supposed to fit. And I know for myself, that was one of the things also that I learned in being in various leadership positions, that you do have to make that understanding that you're not supposed to be the one who solves all the problems. You're the one supposed to understand what the problems are and know who to go to help you figure out what's the best way to solve it.
Right. You're a pretty prolific blogger, and you get an active, very active comments in your in each of your posts. And I noticed on your website you had a great quote. I enjoyed, "Opportunity is missed by most people because it is dressed in overalls and looks like work," and you attribute it to Thomas Edison. So tell people, first of all, where we can find your blog.
Okay, sure. It's on my website at tanveernasir.com. I'll spell it out. It's TanveerNasier.com. And I blog a lot about leadership, but I always try to come at it from various different vantage points. For example, this week I was using jazz as the inspiration of what we can learn about how to work in teams, how to communicate in teams and stuff, and how we should let others, in fact, take the lead on certain endeavors, certain projects, and that the leader really just, you know, takes a step back and says, "You're running the show." So you can find my articles and my writings on that site.
Yeah, that's great. I definitely recommend that if our listeners aren't over there yet, you should get over there and subscribe to it. You're also active on Twitter, and we generally ask our weekly leader guests about their thoughts about social media and new communication technologies and how they impact the way we relate to other people and manage people, supervise people, and actually lead people. So what are your thoughts on how these new tools are changing the leadership landscape?
I think it's changing it a lot because it's starting to make things less hierarchical and making things less of being in silos. We're flattening the world in some ways, because now people are able to do what they've always done, which is communicate. I mean, I know it's one of the things everyone says, wow, people are now able to talk with people they couldn't before. But the thing is, we were always talking with people. We just always had some limitation in our ability, whether it was geography, usually was our distance. And I think for leaders, there is that same problem. We have a distance problem, you know, especially if you go into more stratified organizations. One of the shows I don't watch it often, but I've seen a lot talked about it is Undercover Boss. Mm-hmm. And I think that show is a great example of how a lot of leaders have become disconnected. They have a lack of open communication with those who are under their care. And we see what that leads to and the problems that it comes up from that. And I think what social media is starting to do is it's starting to level that playing field, that it's breaking down those walls. I mean, before you had to go through all those gatekeepers to go and talk to the higher-ups, you know. And what social media, I think, is starting to do is it's starting now to make it where anybody can access anyone. And I think that's one of the reasons why I know there's been a few studies that show that there's a lot of companies where the CEOs are still not on – you know, using Twitter or LinkedIn or any of these other public sites because they're just not comfortable with being so exposed.
Yeah.
They're so used to having that trusted, you know, group around them to filter stuff out that they're not used to just going out there and suddenly just having all these people suddenly talking to them that they never would have had an opportunity to talk to.
What are you currently reading? What's on your nightstand?
Oh, actually, it's funny. I'm actually reading a book it's another book that I have for review on my website. It's called The Drucker Lectures, done by McGraw-Hill. Essentially, it's a list or a series of lectures that Drucker did that are in the archives but haven't gotten a lot of attention. These are the ones that are less spoken of. They're not in any of his books and so forth. So, but they're collated together to show some of the ideas and thoughts that he had about various things. Some of it's about like the environment. Some are about communication, And I'm actually enjoying reading it. I mean, anyone who's read anything from him, I'm sure, would appreciate why it'd be such an enjoyable read. But there's been times where after reading a speech, I actually go back to the beginning to see the date of when he said this, because I could swear he's talking about an issue that's on our plate today. And it just showed, it turns out this is something that he spoke of like 40, 50 years ago. And I think that just shows the brilliance of this man and of a thinker. And one of the things he does point out in one of his speeches is that how he loves reading about stuff that has nothing to do with management and stuff. And I think that really emphasizes the importance that we do need to become more well-rounded, because we can find those insights, those ideas, all sorts of human disciplines, and really get stuff that might make us understand maybe why we're having the challenges we are and how we can address them.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. You are a busy guy and you only have about an hour to spend with somebody, and we want to arrange a lunch so you can meet with any historic or contemporary figure. And in this hour, you'd be able to discuss or explore leadership. So who would that be, and what would you want to take away from that experience?
Ah, wow, good question. Trying to think of an elusive one, but right off the top of my head, I'd have to say Winston Churchill. Here's a guy who, if you really look at his history, right from our point, we look upon him as being one of the great leaders. But back then, he was looked upon as being sufficient, pretty good, and then near the end, he was like, oh, let's just get rid of this guy.
Right. Yeah.
And ultimately, what really helped change it was him writing about his own history, right? You go, well, this is what I did.
Right.
And that's really what's helped to shape what we now think of him today. So for me, it would be really more to understand how did he, considering the challenges he had to face and how he had to lead, his constituents, it would be really to understand what was going on in his mind at those times. How did he deal with those moments where he had this challenge he had to face and he had to convince his people that this was the best way for them to resolve it? And how was he going to do that? And to, what was his reflection on the fact that, was it just, basic fatigue that we all have, that we're kind of tired of seeing the same person day after day, sort of a thing in leadership? Is that why ultimately, Britons decided they wanted to have someone else come in, or was there something else? So I would think it'd be more him, because I know historically we tend to look upon him as a great leader, but when you really look at it in the context of his times, he really struggled a lot. And so I think that he would be really a great person to talk to really, learn more about that.
What single piece of advice do you have for people interested in exercising their leadership more effectively?
I think it's a common thread that we've been showing in our conversation today. And I'd say, the most important thing, it seems these days, that you need to demonstrate, we say a lot that you need to communicate, but I think you need to communicate with empathy. I think you need to demonstrate that when you're talking and communicating with someone, you're hearing them and you reflect what the emotional situation they're going through. If they're feeling stressed, if they're feeling scared, you need to show that you're aware of that, that you're not ambivalent to it. You don't just focus on that, okay, well, we need to increase our production rate by 20%. You need to show that you understand what's that going to mean for the people on the front lines to increase by 20%. How is that going to affect their day-to-day affairs? I think right now, that's what we really need to see in our leadership, because in some cases, there's not going to be a quick fix. And I think a lot of us are willing to accept that under the provision that we know that those in charge are aware that, you know, they're not so oblivious, they're not behind closed doors in their C-suite, their ivory tower, whatever you want to define it as, but that they really do appreciate what everyone in their organization is going through, everyone who is under their care is going through.
So, Tanvir, where can people find you? Again, I know you gave your website and blog URL, but let's give them all of your Twitter ID and everything else.
Sure. You can, like I said, you can find me on my website, tanvirnasir.com. That's where my blog is. You can also contact me about my business coaching through that site. I'm also very active on Twitter. My handle is tanvirnasir. That's TanVeerNasEer. Yeah, I hope to see you guys. I welcome you all to come check out my site. If any of my pieces resonate with you, please leave a comment. I respond to every single one.
You do.
And if you don't follow me on Twitter, follow me. And I love to share content. I love to share the writings of a lot of people who I enjoy following and I enjoy reading and so forth. I hope to find you on Twitter as well.
I love your blog, by the way. I like.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's very very fresh. And is that something you designed, or is it's
yeah?
Just
the site is for those who haven't seen it. The site was designed by me. There's a lot of artwork on there on the bottom, and that's the artwork from my kids as well. I wanted a site that obviously I wanted to be very distinct, so that people would know immediately that it's my site they're on. But I also wanted something that reflected the kind of ideas and the thoughts that I wanted to share. So it's really like I wanted something that was creative and it was innovative and distinct. And that's what I usually try to write about when I write in leadership in that vein.
I think you accomplished that. And you know, when you go there, I think you get a little better understanding of who you are. So I think that's kind of rare on the internet. A lot of times you go to pretty generic websites, and yours certainly has much more personal flavor, and it's cool. Good job.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
Well, I really appreciate you stepping in this week for Pam. It was fun chatting with you, and maybe we'll get you back for one of our roundtables where we get a bunch of the other leadership bloggers and toss around an idea for about an hour. And,
that would be great. I'd love that.
And you can always get us over at weeklyleader.net. You can leave a comment on the post for the podcast and give us some feedback about what you heard here or what you might like to hear in the future. Of course, we have a really talented team of passionate bloggers who are passionate about leadership, I should say. They'd love to hear from you, too. You can always get us by emailing us at podcast@weeklyleader.net, and we're on Twitter at weeklyleader, and I'm at Peter Mello. That's PETERMELLO. And, again, all of our contributors' Twitter IDs will be in the show notes as well. If you use iTunes, really appreciate it if you rate or review the podcast, because it gets us more listeners, and that's helpful. And finally, we just want to thank you for investing your valuable time with us, and we look forward to being with you again next week.
Hi, this is Chad Hollister, and I am proud to be a PodSafe artist.
Imagine if we did what we wanted to do, and not what we feel that we need to. Our whole way of life would be so in tune, so in tune. Singing and swinging in the streets, life would finally have a soulful heartbeat. Our drums be drumming while we move our feet. Praying for us.
I'm still walking, but I picked up the pace. I know my heart's got no time to waste. The fields are calling for a brand new day, a brand new way. An inspiration will be making the news instead of always singing the blues. A unified
praying for a change.